BBC News with David Austin. The United States Defense Secretary, Donald Rumsfeld, has said the American-led coalition in Iraq has not lost control of the situation, despite the upsurge in fighting against both Sunni and Shiite militias. Mr. Rumsfeld said US plans would not be derailed, but he suggested that some American troops might have to stay in Iraq longer than originally intended.
Those who oppose the Iraqi people's transition to freedom and self-rule will not be permitted to derail it. U.S. forces are on the offense. The United States and our partners and free Iraqi forces are taking the battle to the terrorists.
Mr. Rumsfeld said only a relatively small number of what he called Iraqi terrorists and militias were involved in the fighting, which over the past few days has cost the lives of more than 100 Iraqis and left at least 30 coalition soldiers dead. A BBC correspondent in Iraq says that Fallujah has become a war zone and the hospitals there are inundated with casualties. Meanwhile, the leading Shiite cleric in Iraq, Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani, has condemned the way US forces are dealing with the Shiite resistance. The Ayatollah appealed for a wise and peaceful approach from all sides. His comments came after the American military commander, Brigadier General Mark Kimmett, vowed to crush the Shiite Muslim militants loyal to Muqtada as-Sadr. The Secretary General of the United Nations, Kofi Annan, says outside military intervention may be needed to halt fighting in Western Sudan. Mr. Annan said he was gravely concerned about the situation in the Darfur region, where Arab militias have been accused of ethnic cleansing against black Africans. In the United States, President Bush said the Sudanese government must stop what he called the atrocities being committed by local militias in Darfur. Asked about the possibility of military action, Mr. Bush said the U.S. was concentrating on diplomacy. The Sudanese government said that what was needed was humanitarian aid, not military intervention. A French government minister, Renaud Muselier, has left early from ceremonies marking the 10th anniversary of the start of the genocide in Rwanda, after France was strongly criticized by the Rwandan president, Paul Kagame. Speaking at a memorial service in the capital, Kigali, Mr. Kagame had repeated accusations that France trained and armed the Hutu militias which carried out the mass killings. The French government has angrily denied the accusations. Mike Wooldridge reports from Kigali.
The day had begun with a somber act. Skulls cracked by machete blows are stacked in churches and other places where people were killed. Then in a stadium packed virtually to capacity, the commemorations moved from the personal to the political. President Kagame said Rwandans themselves must bear the primary responsibility for the genocide, but casting the blame elsewhere too, he said he was glad to single out the French. Not for the first time, but the significance is that Mr. Kagame chose this particular occasion to accuse France in such strident terms, provoking a diplomatic spat and an equally robust response from the French government.
You're listening to the news from the BBC. A union leader in Greece says the lives of construction workers in Athens are being put at risk, with safety rules being overlooked in the rush to complete facilities for the Olympic Games, which start in just over 4 months' time. From Athens, Matt Williams reports.
Georgios Filiousis, the president of the Construction Workers Union, says health and safety is being sacrificed for speed. He says 13 workers have already lost their lives, compared to one death in the run-up to the Sydney Games, and he blames this on companies cutting costs. The contractors insist protective gear is being provided, but few of those on sites around the capital can be seen wearing hard hats. Mr. Filiousis is warning that more workers will die as the deadline draws nearer and the pressure increases to have Athens ready.
The Greek Prime Minister, Kostas Karamanlis, has said that despite the hurry, his highest priority is the complete safety of Greece, athletes and visitors. The Greek Cypriot leader, President Tassos Papadopoulos, has urged voters to reject a United Nations plan for the reunification of the island in a referendum later this month. The president said that he supported finding a solution for Cyprus, but not the UN proposal to reunite the Greek and Turkish sides in a loose federation. A license has been issued for the first time to a company hoping to make a manned spaceflight in a privately owned rocket. The license from the US Federal Aviation Authorities gives the American firm permission to attempt a suborbital flight using a winged space plane of its own design. A $10 million prize is on offer for the first commercial team to make a manned flight to an altitude of 100 kilometers and then repeat it within 2 weeks. And that's the latest BBC News.
6 minutes past two, GMT. This is The World Today from the BBC World Service with Fergus Nicol and Mark Whittaker.
1 year ago, American forces had reached the outskirts of Baghdad. The war, it seemed, was over. But 12 months on, the campaign to topple Saddam Hussein is beginning to look like just the precursor for a far more intense, vicious, and possibly protracted conflict. The sound of American missiles fired at a mosque complex in the town of Fallujah, west of Baghdad. Some reports initially said around 40 Iraqis were killed, but the American military say they found no bodies. Whatever the figures, the clashes in Fallujah and elsewhere repeated across Iraq, even in areas which until recently had been relatively peaceful. And it seems the main effect they're having is the one Americans most dread, a hardening of Iraqi popular opinion against the occupiers. This community leader, Abdul Wahab al-Qaisi, was certainly in a defiant mood.
We have to hold out, fight and struggle. This is our land. We did not attack America. It is America that attacked us. It travelled thousands of kilometres across the oceans to attack us. We have to hold fast to our religion, men, Islam and mosques.
The voice of a community leader in a Sunni part of the country in Fallujah. Well, the challenge to the US administration in Iraq posed by Muqtada Sadr, the Shia cleric, has been met by some extremely tough language from the American military. I asked our Baghdad correspondent Caroline Hawley whether there's a risk of this aggressive American strategy backfiring.
I think there are many, many Iraqis who believe the American approach is entirely wrong, that it will backfire, that by going after the insurgents so aggressively, by taking on a city like Fallujah, by bombing it, by talking about crushing the Shiite uprising, that they are playing into the hands of the militants. They're making things worse. I was out in Sadr City recently, the Shiite slum of Baghdad, and there have been civilians killed, and the Americans have been using helicopter gunships, and people are very, very angry. And one person said to me, even if we're not followers of Muqtada al-Sadr, we will be now. This will be a general uprising against the occupation. And these are people who celebrated the overthrow of Saddam Hussein a year ago. They were the most glad to see the back of him. They were oppressed by him. And now they feel they have been badly treated by the Americans and they want to see an end to the occupation.
We're hearing a lot, Caroline, about US military action, British, Italians to the south caught up in confrontations as well. We're not hearing much about Iraqi security personnel, police and so on. What are they up to?
It's a very, very interesting question. The Iraqi security forces, the new Iraqi security men, and there are about 200,000 of them that the Americans have say they've put in uniform. They are a key part of the American exit strategy here. But in many cases, we've seen them simply melt away. Out in Sadr City, for example, American troops are now in control of the police stations. And in some cases, also, you have some of these police members who are clearly siding, openly siding with Muqtada al-Sadr's supporters. So I think this is quite a worrying development for the Americans. It raises key questions about the whole American plan here, if indeed there is one.
And what about the personality of Ayatollah Sistani? What's he saying, and is it something that the Americans can take any comfort from?
Well, Ayatollah Sistani is, of course, the most senior Shiite cleric in Iraq. He is a moderate, although he's certainly been a thorn in the side of the Americans in the past. He's forced them to reconsider many of their political plans for the future of Iraq. He's come out with a statement basically appealing for calm. He was critical of the way the Americans have been handling the current crisis, but he also condemned what he called aggression against public and private property, that I think really is a dig at Muqtada al-Sadr's supporters. There's no love lost between Muqtada al-Sadr and Ayatollah Ali Sistani, but he is appealing for calm. He says that neither side should engage in provocative acts that could lead to more chaos and bloodshed. I think the problem now is that so much blood has been shed that the voice of the moderates has been weakened, and someone like Muqtada al-Sadr, who is a fringe character, a fringe element, has now gained a lot more support.
Caroline Hawley. Well, to some it might seem the coalition is getting bogged down in Iraq. There's even been talk of it being Bush's Vietnam. But the US Defense Secretary, Donald Rumsfeld, told a press conference at the Pentagon that American forces were undaunted and there'd be no early exit from Iraq.
Those who may be fearful that our forces will leave when sovereignty transfers or before the job is done, you have nothing to fear. The United States will stay the course. We will stay until the task is complete. As President Bush has said, we did not charge hundreds of miles into the heart of Iraq and pay a bitter cost of casualties to liberate 25 million people only to retreat before a band of thugs and assassins.
Mr. Rumsfeld did his best to play down the scale of the resistance to U.S. forces in Iraq, but he hinted that some troops who were due to be pulled out will be kept on to deal with the emergency.
Because we're in the midst of a major troop rotation, we have a planned increase in the number of U.S. troops in Iraq. We're taking advantage of that increase, and we will likely be managing the pace of the redeployments to allow those seasoned troops with experience and relationships with the local populations to see the current situation through.
But on the floor of the U.S. Senate, the escalation of violence and now the increase in the number of U.S. troops prompted the senior Democrat Senator Robert Byrd to see parallels with a previous U.S. war.
Surely, I am not the only one who hears echoes of Vietnam in this development. I was here in this chamber when the word went out. Send more men. We'll be out by Christmas.
So what of the Republicans? Congressman Jeff Flake sits on the Committee on International Relations. I asked him whether the U.S. now had a clear military strategy in Iraq.
I think we're obligated to respond to the violence that's occurred. I don't think we have any other choice. And that's what our military leaders have said, and it looks like that's exactly what we're doing.
Is that all the U.S. can do, though, is just react, really, rather than be proactive?
Well, we're doing what we can, obviously through our intelligence networks and whatnot, to find out any violence that is planned, and certainly we're responding and trying to take preemptive action there. But there have been some who have questioned what we're doing now in terms of responding, and I just don't know what else you can do but respond to the current violence.
What does the U.S. plan to do then about Muqtada al-Sadr and his militia, the Army of Mehdi?
Well, it's quite clear. We've issued an arrest warrant, and as long as they continue to perpetrate violence, then we have to bring them to justice. We have no other choice there. So, and it looks as if they're trying to use mosques and whatever else is cover, and we certainly can't hesitate but to move ahead.
But how are you going to arrest him? As you say, mentioning mosques, he's now in Najaf, isn't he? One of the two holiest cities for Shia Muslims. How does the U.S. go in there and bring him out?
Well, I mean, the same way that we've looked for other people on the wanted list. You try to use your intelligence networks, and hopefully somebody will give him up or reveal his location, or you find him other ways. But you have to use whatever means are at your disposal to root him out.
But that sounds like clutching at straws, really, doesn't it?
No, it is possible. If you look at with the Iraqis, we have nearly all of those that we sought initially. It may take a little while, but I'm confident that we'll get to it.
But if coalition forces go into Najaf or if they damage a mosque, there is a danger, though, isn't there, that more and more people who perhaps weren't predisposed to al-Sadr in the first place could become.
Well, I think that that's their design, certainly. When they bunker down in a mosque, they hope that one will be either too afraid to strike, or two, if we do, that it turns the population against. But I think that most Iraqis are smart enough to see that strategy, and in the end it won't work.
But is that a risk that America is prepared to run, do you think?
Yeah, I believe so. If you've seen the events of today, it shows that we are. We have no other choice.
620 U.S. military personnel have died since the war began. How long can this continue?
Well, we do have some significant events coming up in terms of turning over sovereign authority. I believe that will help, regardless of, you know, it doesn't mean that we're ready to pull out, certainly, but just the act of turning over authority, I think, is going to help some. And so I think we're prepared to be in it for the long haul, as our Secretary of Defense and our President have said that we must.
But is that turning over of authority, does it have any meaning if the whole country is awash with violence from top to bottom?
Well, if the whole country were awash with violence, perhaps not, but it is not. There are a lot of areas in the country, particularly in the South, where there's certainly some criminal activity, but not as much terrorism. And so it's not awash in violence from top to bottom. There are a lot of areas that are getting along quite fine.
Republican Congressman Jeff Flake. This is The World Today. It's 2:16 GMT, and coming up later, some monkeying around as one of our reporters goes ape. Yeah, we'll be finding out how chimps may have the edge on humans when it comes to techniques around the office. So if your boss is a gorilla, stay tuned for some monkey business.
Coming out later on The World Today. Now, Algerians go to the polls on Thursday in presidential elections. The violence of the 1990s appears to have been survived, subsided those dreadful days when armed Islamists massacred their fellow citizens. Opponents of the state were rounded up by the army and never seen again. Now, these improvements, due in part to an amnesty for the Islamist insurgents that was introduced by the president, Abdelaziz Bouteflika. Now, he's standing for a second term. There are five other candidates involved. But despite the poll, many Algerians fear that real power still rests in the hand of the army. Well, our colleague Heba Saleh has travelled from her base in Cairo to Algeria. She's been speaking to a pro-democracy activist, Najat Bouda. And Heba asked her first whether these elections do mean real change.
Algeria has some democratic opening, but doesn't have democracy. You know, I personally, as a democratic activist, I will not vote on the 8th April because there is no candidate that represents my point of view, and also because I think that all of these candidates are representative of the current system. I think that all these candidates, it's like just a show for international community to say, see, we are more democratic than other Arabic country, or we are doing a step forward democracy.
When you say all the candidates are from the same system, what do you mean? Which system?
I mean military. I mean those who has the power since 1962, since the independence of this country.
Now, there is this impression, especially with the return of security, that Algeria has turned the page, that it's a new chapter now, and that the kind of the legacy of the years of violence has ended. The president speaks a lot about reconciliation. Has reconciliation been achieved in your view?
Definitely no. I think that you can see it when you walk on the street. First of all, when you go and talk to the family of the victim of terrorists, they will express their hunger to see the people who killed or who kidnapped someone from their family walking on the street, having apartment, having a car. I think that we are not in the stage of the real reconciliation, you know, because in my opinion, the reconciliation means that there is justice, and up to now we haven't got any justice. The problem of the disappeared is still happening. The family of the disappeared didn't receive any answers. The real reconciliation with establishing justice hasn't took place.
But we still meet a lot of people who say they want to vote for Bouteflika because they credit him with restoring peace to the country. They feel that it's time to look ahead.
People who are saying that are, you know, it's a country that has left 10 years of, more than 10 years of violence, where people were dying each day, where we have seen people that has been killed with atrocity. So some little things will seems like a big thing. People, because they are able to go to the street after six, for them it's peace, but they still afraid. You know, it's when you are someone who left this atrocity, when there is a small thing, you will think that it's a big thing.
And that was Heba Saleh in Algeria. It's 20 past 2 GMT. A couple of headlines from the BBC newsroom. The US Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld says coalition forces have not lost control in Iraq, but some American troops may have to stay longer to fight the insurgency. And the UN Secretary General said he can't rule out international military intervention in Western Sudan.
This is The World Today with Fergus Nicol and Mark Whittaker. Now, the head of Germany's central bank has temporarily left his post amid an unfolding scandal. Russell Padmore from our business news staff is with us in the studio. Russell, can you tell us how Ernst Welticker, is that how you pronounce it? Welticker?
Yes, you've got it right.
Has fallen foul of his bosses?
Well, Mr. Weltiger, I suppose it goes back to the New Year holiday in 2002, Mark. Then Ernst Weltiger spent four nights in one of Berlin's most exclusive hotels with his family. The bill of €8,000, that's about $9,000, was paid by Dresdner Bank, one of the big financial groups in Germany. Now, this appears to be a conflict of interest with Mr. Weltiger's job as president of the Bundesbank, one of those state agencies tasked with supervising the activities of the banking sector. The central bank has revealed that Mr. Weltiger, who's 61, has been sent home while an investigation takes place into whether he accepted an illegal gratuity. It's a scandal that's gripping the country, with opinion polls showing a great majority in favour of him resigning. Thomas Hartmann Wendels, a professor of corporate banking at the University of Cologne, believes the scandal doesn't undermine trust in the Bundesbank.
For the central bank, this is not a real problem because the central bank has lost much of its importance, so he can be replaced by another person. I think this will not be a problem, and I think the Bundesbank will not lose its reputation because this is attached personally to Ernst Weltiger and not to the bank.
This is the best part of $10,000, about €8,000, this hotel bill. Just 4 days in a hotel, a rather lavish hotel to say the least. Do you think, although you are saying it's a smallish sum of money, the public in Germany considers it quite a large sum?
Yes, for people it's one of the most luxurious hotels in Berlin, and so a lot of people do not have enough money to stay there, and he gets it for nothing as a gift. So this creates the atmosphere that people say he has to resign. Certainly it was political, not correct. I think in a legal way maybe it's correct or not correct. In a political way it was silly to do that. It should not be a reason to resign, but I think now it seems to me inevitable that he will resign during the next days.
Thomas Hartmann Wendels from the University of Cologne. You've heard it here. It was silly to do that.
Yahoo, Russell. That's not an exclamation from me. It is, of course, because of a well-known internet firm. It's released its quarterly earnings figures. How do they look?
It came just after the so-called bell, in other words, when the New York financial markets, the stock exchange, rang the final bell and stopped trading. Well, Yahoo posted quarterly profits that are more than double the same 3 months of last year. Yahoo's net profit, $101 million, a pretty good increase on $47 million from the first quarter of 2003. The good performance achieved largely thanks to good growth in revenues from online advertising, as well as the company's other services, and those include things like online dating, even job searches.
If your figures go up like that, it will be Yahoo, wouldn't it? What about oil prices? They're moving up.
Yes, the international price of oil has jumped higher. The energy markets are fearing reserves in America are falling too low. Prices did increase after the US government revealed weekly stocks have fallen by more than 2 million barrels to 292 million barrels. And that reverses 6 weeks of increase in crude reserves. Well, to the financial markets in Tokyo, the Nikkei average currently up 0.1%, 12,031, reacting to a fall in New York, the Dow down nearly 1%.
And finally, Russell, shares in Tokyo?
Well, as we just outlined, up 0.1%, 12,031. Hong Kong, probably what you're referring to there, Mark, down 0.1%, mixing up Hong Kong and Tokyo, I think.
The market's mixed up like that.
The Japanese yen's trading 105.5 against the dollar. The euro's worth $1.218 at the moment. Now, thanks, Russell.
This is the BBC in Vancouver.
This is the BBC in Belgrade.
This is the BBC in Singapore.
This is the BBC in Kigali.
This is the BBC in New York.
Wherever you are, however you listen, this is the BBC.
It's 5 o'clock in Copenhagen, 10 o'clock in Bangkok, 11 o'clock in Singapore. Wherever you are, welcome to the BBC World Service. Hello, I'm John Jason, and at 3 o'clock GMT, these are the latest BBC news headlines. The US Defense Secretary, Donald Rumsfeld, says coalition forces have not lost control in Iraq, but some American troops may have to stay longer to fight the insurgency. The highest-ranking Shiite cleric in Iraq has called for calm, but he's condemned the American military's handling of the conflict. The United Nations Secretary General has said he can't rule out international military intervention in Western Sudan. Details of those and other stories coming up. Don't forget, too, news on the internet, bbcnews.com.
BBC News with Ian Purden. The United States Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld has said the American-led coalition in Iraq has not lost control of the situation, despite the upsurge in fighting against both Sunni and Shiite militias. Mr. Rumsfeld said U.S. plans would not be derailed, but he suggested that some American troops might have to stay in Iraq longer than originally intended. Here's our Pentagon correspondent, Nick Childs.
This was another message of resolve from the Bush administration. The United States will stay the course in Iraq, Donald Rumsfeld said, and he insisted that US-led forces had not lost control of the security situation there. The US Defense Secretary argued that it's a relatively small number of people who are involved in the current fighting. At the same time, he acknowledged that this is an important moment for Iraq and a test of wills in which the stakes are high. And this was a hurriedly arranged news conference by the Pentagon, a sign perhaps of how worried the Bush administration is about what's unfolding in Iraq.
Meanwhile, the leading Shiite cleric in Iraq, Ayatollah Ali Sistani, has condemned the way that US forces are dealing with the Shiite resistance. The Ayatollah appealed for a wise and peaceful approach from all sides. His comments came after the American military commander, Brigadier General Mark Kimmitt, vowed to crush the Shiite Muslim militants loyal to Muqtada al-Sadr. The Secretary General of the United Nations, Kofi Annan, says outside military intervention may be needed to halt fighting in Western Sudan. Mr. Annan said he was gravely concerned about the situation in the Darfur region, where Arab militias have been accused of ethnic cleansing against black Africans. In the United States, President Bush said the Sudanese government must stop what he called the atrocities being committed by local militias in Darfur. Asked about the possibility of military action, Mr. Bush said the U.S. was concentrating on diplomacy. The Sudanese government said what was needed was humanitarian aid, not military intervention. A French government minister has left early from ceremonies marking the 10th anniversary of the start of the genocide in Rwanda after France was strongly criticised by the Rwandan president Paul Kagame. The French minister, Renaud Muselier, cut short his visit in protest. Speaking at a memorial service in the capital Kigali, Mr. Kagame had repeated accusations that France trained and armed the Hutu militias which carried out the mass killings. The French government has reacted angrily to the accusations. The French defense minister, Michel Alliot-Marie, said they were scandalous.
These criticisms are completely unfounded. The French soldiers, even if they were not able to prevent all the massacres, and I can assure you that this has really affected them psychologically, did nevertheless prevent a total genocide from taking place. They acted under a UN mandate. They acted in complete conformity to that mandate. They really did everything to prevent an even more tragic outcome.
You're listening to the news from the BBC in London. A union leader in Greece says the lives of construction workers in Athens are being put at risk, with safety rules being overlooked in the rush to complete facilities for the Olympic Games, which begin in just over 4 months' time. From Athens, Matt Williams reports.
Georgios Filiousis, the president of the Construction Workers Union, says health and safety is being sacrificed for speed. He says 13 workers have already lost their lives, compared to one death in the run-up to the Sydney Games, and he blames this on companies cutting costs. The contractors insist protective gear is being provided, but few of those on sites around the capital can be seen wearing hard hats. Mr. Filiousis is warning that more workers will die as the deadline draws nearer and the pressure increases to have Athens ready.
The Greek Prime Minister, Kostas Karamanlis, has said that despite the hurry, his highest priority is the complete safety of Greece, athletes and visitors. The people of Algeria are about to vote in a presidential election. Among the six candidates is the incumbent president, Abdelaziz Bouteflika, whose main challenger is the man he sacked as prime minister last year, Ali Benflis. Mr. Bouteflika's opponents have said he plans to rig the election and that he's manipulated the media and abused public funds. But the BBC correspondent in Algiers says many Algerians credit Mr. Bouteflika with the decline in the political violence which has cost more than 100,000 lives since 1992. A license has been issued for the first time to a company hoping to make a manned spaceflight in a privately owned rocket. The license from the US Federal Aviation Authorities gives the American firm permission to attempt a suborbital flight using a winged space plane of its own design. A $10 million prize is on offer for the first commercial team to make a manned flight to an altitude of 100 kilometres and then to repeat it within 2 weeks. BBC News.